My name is Lisa Rehana and I hail from Aotearoa, which is New Zealand, in the South Pacific.
You say you're an artist. How do you describe what you do?
I mostly say I'm an artist because I work with a lot of digital technology, but I prefer working within the art world. Although I've worked with a lot of filmmakers and use, a classic filmmaker's methodology, but I like presenting works in art galleries. They have a very different sort of resonance for the audience, and it's different to broadcast or narrowcasting, and there's a kind of a physicality about it that I like. You've just seen In Pursuit of Venus Infected, and I think just the fact that you can get up and walk along with the images if you want to, and there's a sort of there's no barriers of chairs like you might have in a classic cinema sort of setup. So yeah, artist is kind of a good catch-all phrase.
Did this piece start with the wallpaper?
Yes, it did. My partner James Pinker and I were at Australia National Gallery, which is in Canberra, visiting another exhibit, and the wallpaper, they also own a complete set of the Dufour Les Sauvages de la Mer Pacific wallpapers, and we happened to see it many, many years ago, and it seemed extremely strange, but incredibly beautiful and quite... I'd never seen anything like it before, because it wasn't a wallpaper that circulated within New Zealand. It was a wallpaper that was mostly sold into America and into Europe, because it was produced by the French, and they were at war with the British at the time. So it's not something that's really from our region, even though it's about our region. So I saw that wallpaper, and then James had bought a catalogue, and years later I was looking for a new project to do, and I came across the catalogue, and that's when I had this kind of eureka moment and thought, I'm going to bring that to life, the wallpaper, and talk back to it through time, presenting it from a contemporary perspective and from a Pacific perspective. And so to kind of have these two documents look at each other from very, very different positions, time periods, and philosophies. So to show this work here at the Honolulu Art Museum is really amazing, because it's the first time the video and the wallpaper are sitting pretty much alongside each other.
Can you just, on a basic level, describe the perspective in the film?
Okay, so In Pursuit of Venus Infected, here in Honolulu, it's 18 metres long and, I don't know, maybe 2.5 metres high. So it's a very extended or a very wide view.
It's a tableau.
It's a tableau, yes, and it kind of, in some ways it looks a little bit like a tapestry, because there's a series of stories, or little vignettes, I call them vignettes because it comes from a French perspective, but short drama pieces. And all these little dramas that take place are on the shore, so you're sort of sitting in front of a digital image which shows that you're on land, and then there's a horizon line, and in the horizon line you can see the sea, and then there's clouds. It sort of passes by you from right to left in a very slow, mesmerizing speed. So each story is on screen for 4 minutes, and there's 80 vignettes. So there's lots and lots of different stories that kind of complicate the histories that it's based around, which is from the explorers' journeys, such as Captain Cook, Joseph Banks, De La Perouse, but also bringing into the field, you see some of the crew from the 17th century voyages, explorers' voyages.
So some stories authentic to them are being enacted as well.
Yes, of course. It's not just a Pacific, from a Pacific perspective. I mean, it's a lot of humanity, really. There's a lot of humanity happening before your eyes. And it's really about the encounters that took place on the seashore. But, what I was very interested in is that when you look at some of these stories, for instance, there's a haka being performed by a Maori dance troupe, and you see it from behind, which is to stop it feeling like it's about always being on show, that it's not just, it's a cultural practice. And what it does is it puts the audience as part of the tangata whenua, or the people of the land. So it's really trying to shift your ideas about ways of seeing and perspectives and rethinking those histories that have taken us, brought us through where we are today.
Well, you've done it in such a sly way, because the set of the tableau has these like stylized plants and spaces that make me feel like I'm in a colonial setting.
Yes, it's completely. Well, of course, the illustrator that Charvet employed to create the wallpaper had been to Guadalupe, but not through the Pacific, and it's one of the reasons that the work looks so strange and odd to our eyes. And remaking it, I could have taken the opportunity to perhaps take more flora from...
Or like correct it.
Yeah, or correct it. But I also felt that there was an authenticity to the original wallpaper. I mean, even though it's a kooky thing, it is absolutely beautiful, and it was a technological feat of its time. It's in that really early print media, and
so many colors, so many perspectives, 25 panels.
Yes, it's a beautiful thing, and it takes over 1,000 wood blocks to make. It really was at the top of its game in its time. So I wanted to also keep that connection quite tight, because in some ways I was more interested in thinking about the people that occupied those spaces as much as the flora.
It makes us feel so strange to be in this colonial space. You know, it's really a strange feeling.
Which is really good, because I think it keeps the audience on its toes. It sort of feels slightly off, and that keeps you, it reminds you, you know, because you can fall into this world, and of course it's not a true world, and it's a painted world. But because there's these plants, you kind of get lulled into feeling that you're in this other utopian space. But what I liked about leaving it in that manner, and because it isn't actually, it's nowhere, it's nothing, it's a non-place. And so because of that, it's a place that anyone can be in. So it becomes a platform for all the voices that speak across it. It's not particularly Hawaii, it's not Tahiti, it's not New Zealand. It's just this platform. So I use the original structure of the wallpaper in a way that allows me to invite people into it, to be a part of it as a performer, and then to speak their language or be the living, breathing face of their ancestors, whether they're on the Western side or on the Indigenous perspective. Because, of course, there are a number of actors who are, we call them Pākehā in New Zealand, the Westerners who have come to live in New Zealand. So, you know, it's not really anybody's place at all.
Thanks for mentioning that some of the actors were positioned with their backs to the camera and so on, because there is this feeling of that you're an observer to everyday things. Yeah, which is so a perspective we'd never get.
Yes. Well, I thought that was really important too, because I think, you know, there is this exoticization of Indigenous peoples. I mean, you can see that in the way that Hawaii is sold as an image overseas. And I was trying to find methods to resist that idea. One of which is seeing, there's a number of scenes where dance troupes are choreographing or they're practicing their craft. And that's something that you don't see if they're performing for you. Again, with the haka, you see, you're looking at them from behind, so they're almost representing you. I wanted to resist that feeling of being that consumption. And so it was really important to try and find ways to, sometimes people are angled at a slight 45 degree angle to the audience. So it's almost like people are enacting culture for their own pleasure, not to be sold. And one of my favourite scenes in the work is very quiet. It's just a group of Aboriginal women sitting, and they're weaving baskets, and they're making a possum skin cloak. And that was a resistance to this feeling of like that you can't take your culture away, and that we're still alive and we're here. And the women that I work with, they're not actors, they are actually weavers. They're a weaving group that I found who come from the original tribe where Cook landed in Australia. And I felt that it was really, I said to them, if you're not in it, again, it's like an absence and there's no voice, and it's really important. You just need to do what you do, and that's to be seen to be practicing culture and that you've held on to it, and here it is. So it's a very, very minimal scene, which is one of the things I really like about it. It's just quietly, things are happening. It's like life.
It is in that way. I just love how you separated performance and commodity and kind of so conscientiously removed them.
Well, it's tricky too, because of course at the same time, I mean, everyone is exotic because they are. They are beautiful, and so I didn't want to, you can't really take that away, and it's trying to acknowledge that, but without feeling like you're trying to extract something from it again and again, because so many cultures feel like they're on show, or so much has been taken.
Or that we only see it when it's on show.
Yes, correct.
Did this piece turn out to be about different things in different places that it's shown?
Yes, it has. It's been very, very interesting. And every time we've shown it, it's now traveled to quite a number of different places. And each time the context and the place brings something new, it'll amplify something else. And I was saying to Hei Aloha, who's the curator of the exhibition, how wonderful it is that she's got this wallpaper here. And I think that also speaks to this building, the Honolulu Museum of Art and its history. And it kind of, because when I first came to Hawaii, I remember going up to the Bishop Museum, and they have a very, very small component. They've got, I remember seeing on a fire guard, a fireplace guard, a tiny little section, maybe, you know, only a half a meter all up, and it's the death of Cook, Captain Cook, which I think is great on fire.
An entire wall.
yeah. And so it was one of the, I hadn't clocked that work before and realised, you know, there's these histories, and even for me in time, the first time I came here seeing something of that wallpaper, not knowing eventually, many years later, I'll be coming back to show a very large, enlarged version of the work that inspired that, and
10 years, huh?
Well, actually, about? Probably more like 12 years.
Really? To pull the whole thing together. Oh,
yes,
man.
Yes. Because when I first embarked on this project, I knew that it would have a long life, and I like that thing of imbuing time into a work, because I think if you do a lot of care and it has a long life. I mean, you come to an art gallery and people are still looking at works that are 100, 200, 300,000 years old. So they do have a life in the world. So my crew and I, we had quite a significant smaller group that we would spend time thinking about it. And I said I wanted to future-proof it and make it the best that it possibly could be, because it would have a long life So that, which made it quite difficult to complete the work, because we're using old technology to get to something that was as just sort of really coming on into general use now. So it's what you call a 15K project. So that's like putting four 4K TVs next to each other. So we've really wanted to give it a long sense of life into it. So And I think the subject matter and all the people who are in it, the cast and crew, everyone who's gifted their time and energy into the work deserve, you know, it deserves that kind of care.
Oh man, it looks the product of such care. What do you think people feel when they see it?
Oh, people have all sorts of reactions. We've got books of, when it showed at Venice Biennale, we had all sorts of responses from people. I get emails all the time.
What do they make of it?
Well, there's multiple. It just depends on where they come from. I mean, I have emails from parents who say they can't believe that their child has sat in front of a work for hours and sat still in an art gallery. They don't usually have that experience. Some people feel very sad because they can see the colonial histories within it. Some people feel angry because of those colonial histories. Many people feel proud because it's another reckoning and another way of thinking about culture and seeing it and seeing it performed in that manner. I mean, certainly while I was making it, it was as the global financial crisis hit, and I didn't want the machinations of other people out there making me think any smaller about the way that I wanted to present our stories to the world. So I think it was it's inspiring in that regard to really not, you know, that our stories are worthy of that grandeur. I think that was something from a political perspective that was really important for me to demonstrate and show that for other artists. And it's such a it's such a big immersive work that it is one that kind of engulfs people and takes them on a journey. When I first showed it in Auckland Art Gallery in New Zealand, it was really amazing. I loved, I caught the lift up to the floor that it was playing, and there was a group of elderly people. There was about six or seven of them, and they were all excited. They were all going to see this work by Lisa Rayhana, and I thought it was amazing because they were really looking at the histories and really reevaluating how they felt about some of these colonial histories, because if you read them in the book, or it's something that's handed down, but to see some of these stories enacted in front of you gives you another sense of that, what the reality may have been like, because of course it isn't real. We are reenacting these things, but it makes people think again, think upon what those histories are.
Oh, what fun. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Oh,
you're fantastic to talk with.
That's nice little meringue.
You've had time to think about things. New project now?
Oh, yeah. We're making, James and I have just come from the United Arab Emirates, and we've just made a 3D film. We're making a video installation, and we fly back next week, and that opens next week on Friday. And again, I'm looking at histories, but I'm really looking at the differences of politics and power for women, and the two main characters. One's Charlotte Badger. She was the first white woman to live in New Zealand. And the other is a young Maori woman who is a martial arts expert. So I'm just looking at their two realities at that time, pre-colonial times, to sort of tease out women's power. And so I'm very, very excited about this next work.